I would excuse and excuse you to this day that thank you very much. I am going to request Mr. Ramaphosa, Waitiki Ramaphosa, and I think one member see their eyes become very red because we still owe them an outstanding issue. Madidi, Klepkhat, Winterfell, Mabopane, it's still outstanding. And there is no excuse. And I'm saying this so that members don't talk to it when they will be talking to this matter, because they can derail us from focusing on the key aspects of what they're supposed to do here today. But we're just giving you that information to say, go and talk to your supervisor, Mr. Kalisa, and Sandra, to say, it can't be right that communities, we talk about these things every time, whenever we stand up in the podium in Parliament, it cannot be right. Mr. Ramaphosa, I'm going to give it to you that you introduce your team and you present in that regard. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honorable members, for the opportunity for the department to come and present their updates. Before I introduce the colleagues and the team, I just want to apologize, Chairperson, on the work that was supposed to have been done in the Northwest with regard to road infrastructure and other interventions by the department. However, there are plans that are in place, but we'll ensure that we as a department will make a follow-up in the province concerns and ensure that whatever has been promised come to realization. I think on that count, I'd like to request the chairperson for my apology to be accepted. And then on the issue at hand, the chairperson, I'm not alone. I'm with the team. I'm leading the team of the road branch of the Department of Transport, the legal division of the department, road accident fund, and also the ministry. So with us, we will be representing the team. It will be myself, it will be Advocate Mason Buka from legal division, it's Mr. Chris Dallanter from road accident fund, there will be Mr. Selo Kubai, and Mr. Molo Pilohodi from the ministry. So what we'll be doing, Chairperson, there are two sessions that actually two documents that will be dealt with by the Road Accident Fund. They will lead the presentation, and immediately after that, there will be questions that will come, but both the department, legal division, and also the rest will respond to those questions or clarify questions. I think on that that one, Chairperson, I'd like to the members to be seen. Next to me is Mr. Lehodu. Maybe can you introduce themselves on that level?
Chairperson and other members, my name is Mulu Pilohodu from the Ministry of.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Selom Kuyani from the Ministry.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Adam Masombuka from the Ministry.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Chris Williamson from the Royal Accident
Fund. Yeah, thanks, Chair. The copies of the presentations have been circulated, and I would just like to request Mr. Williamson just to pick up the presentation.
Thank you. The Road Accident Fund is established in terms of Act 56 of 1996. It's a national public entity scheduled as a Schedule 3A entity under the TFMA. It operates on common law and insurance principles and is called upon to provide social security safety nets to indemnify, rehabilitate and compensate the injured and promote safe use of South African roads. Constitutional court and other judgments shape the mandate of the fund. The last amendment of the Principal Act dealt with the following issues. It improved the governance of the RAF. It provided for a more equitable, fair and transparent compensation system, limiting the liability of the RAF. The amendment realized the following benefits. The discriminatory and unconstitutional 25,000 rand passenger limitations were removed from the bill, from the Act. The unconstitutional exclusion of claims by members of the same household was removed. The common law claim was abolished, ensuring 100% indemnification of wrongdoers, with two exceptions, those being damages in respect of secondary emotional shock or failure by the RAF to pay claims. The right to general damages was also limited in respect of serious injury only. Expenses foreign claims are a thing of the past due to the operation of the new income and family support caps. However, there were amendments that did not realize benefits. The removal of the provision of a cost contribution in respect of a claim that is settled had an unintended consequence in that it gave rise to more litigation, because once you litigate on a claim, the rules of court provide that the successful party is entitled to its cost. This wasn't anticipated when this amendment was passed. The previous amendment bill also for the first time introduced two medical tariffs, a non-emergency and an emergency medical tariff. The non-emergency medical tariff was successfully challenged and the Constitutional Court struck it down. Problem statement is that judgment has increased the RAF liability and has created administrative complexity. Sections in the Act and regulations are challenged based on constitutionality. Attachment and removal of by the sheriff of RAF assets impact operations and processing of claims. Threats and threats of attachment and removal of RAF assets impact the implementation of the cash management plan that the RAF has in place to manage our cash shortfall. The operation of the scheme based on common law principles continue to delay timely, efficient and cost-effective delivery of compensation. The object of this bill considered today is to enable improved cash management and also enable timely, efficient and cost-effective delivery of compensation. The list of proposed amendments are as follows. The insertion of two new definitions, one for a final court order and one for a medical practitioner. Authorizing the RAF to determine and amend the claim forms. To regulate a process to pay final court orders. To authorize the Minister of Transport to prescribe a list of injuries that are automatically deemed serious. To authorize the RAF to offer cost contribution with the offer of compensation. To provide for an initial 30-day no-fault period following immediately after the road accident to pay compensation for medical and related treatment. To provide for a single medical tariff. To provide for a compensation of specified funeral expenses on a no-fault basis limited to a cap. And then to harmonize the prescription regime in respect of claims. So in section 1, the proposal is to insert a definition for a final court order. This definition is aligned to the definition that is defined in the State Liability Act. The definition is required for the amendment to section 15 of the Principal Act. The wording of the particular definition is in the fourth column of the slide, on slide 8. The second amendment is to introduce definitions for the term medical practitioner. The definition is aligned to the definition in the 2008 Road Accident Fund Regulations. The Supreme Court of Appeal in Duma have already interpreted that definition to mean a medical practitioner as we all understand the term. The reason for this amendment is that there was a judgment in the Western Cape which has the effect of opening up submission or completion by the Saturday medical report by allied health professionals, which was never the intention. The court has found that because the legislature had not defined the term, a wider interpretation is required. The next amendment is in section 4. The minister has, in terms of the act, is in terms of the act required to prescribe the forms, but has in the regulations authorized the Road Accident Fund to prescribe those forms, which is ultra-vires. The amendment would rectify that and would put us in a position as some of the other entities, in this instance you could look at SARS and the Compensation Fund, where the administrator prescribes the forms required under that legislation. Section 15 is aligned to a section that you find Section 3 in the State Liability Act. What the section aims to achieve is provide the Road Accident Fund with a structured mechanism to deal with court orders starting in money. I'll talk to the whole process. I think it might be easier than reading off the slides because it is quite involved. So what the process entails is the following. There are three instances where we could arrive at a court order. There could be a final court order, a judgment in terms of compensation. There could be an agreement which is made in order of court, or you could have a bill of cost tax following a court order. In all three instances, the plaintiff is currently entitled to issue a writ and detach and remove assets of the wrong. Such attachments and removals have an impact in terms of how we manage the available cash and how we pay various categories of claims in terms of our cash management plan. We do not have the protection of the State Liability Act. So there are organs of state who have this protection, but we're not one of them. So we need to provide for it independently in our principal act. The process would work as follows. If there is no payment by the fund within 30 days following the order or the taxation or the agreement made in order, the plaintiff would serve on the CEO. The court order, the allocator, if it was a taxation or the judgment, and a certificate by the court stating that there's no appeal or revision or proceedings pending. The fund would then, within the following 13 days, they have to either make payment or enter into an agreement or arrange payment arrangements with the plaintiff. If that does not happen at the end of the 30-day period, the plaintiff can approach the court, issue a writ. The sheriff can come and attach but not remove. If the fund does not bring an application to set aside the attachment within 30 days, the sheriff may then remove and sell in execution. So that's the whole process. And that is what's described on slides up until 12, 13, and up to 15. It would not be open to a plaintiff to follow another process. So as soon as you've got judgment against the fund, you would want to execute and not await payment in terms of the cash management plan, this is the process you would have to follow. In Section 17, the First Amendment, proposed amendment there, provides for the Minister to prescribe a list of injuries that are being serious. This is an innovation that we're trying to implement to ensure that there's less cost associated with a serious injury assessment. Currently under the framework, a claimant wishing to claim general damages from the fund must prove that the injury sustained in the road accident is serious. In order to do that, the claimant must admit to an assessment by a medical practitioner under Regulation 3, which is a protracted and expensive process where the medical practitioner first has regard to a list of non-serious injuries, if the injury is not listed as non-serious, or if it is but there were complications, it then moves into the assessment process, moves into the AMA assessment, the Medical Association guide on permanent impairment. If the outcome of that assessment derives at a 30% whole person impairment or more, it's serious. If not, the medical practitioner moves into a third assessment, third and last phase of the assessment, where he has regard to the narrative, where if the injury resulted in certain consequences, a report is issued stating that this injury is serious, in which instance the person then qualifies for general damages, assuming that merits what he needs, or gives or a favor. What this amendment will achieve is it will upfront provide for a list of deemed serious injuries. But if the injury is on that list, it would not be necessary for this claimant to submit to another medical assessment with the associated cost related to it. However, the option will remain there. So if an injury is not listed on the serious injury list, it will be open to the claimant to move into the Regulation 3 formal assessment process if he or she would want to have the injury assessed under the formal process. Next amendment would be to reintroduce an empowering provision in the Principal Act that would allow the Road Accident Fund to offer a cost contribution once the claim is settled. As I've discussed under the challenges, we had such a provision up until prior to 1 August 2008. And in respect of claims arising before that date, that provision is still there. So when a claimant settles a claim with a RAF, under the old dispensation, the RAF is empowered to offer a cost contribution which deals with those disbursements and the reasonable fees of the settled attorney involved. You pay it as a cost contribution and the claim is settled on that basis. Because that was a removal, there's now an incentive from a plaintiff attorney to not settle claims, to move it into litigation, because the rules of litigation allow them then a cost contribution. So by reintroducing the empowering provision, it is hoped that it would mitigate against unnecessary litigation. A very big amendment is the next one dealing with 50-day no-fault provision. What is proposed is to provide that all claimants injured in road accidents would qualify for medical treatment immediately, all medical treatment immediately rendered after the accident for a 50-day period, regardless of fault. What that would achieve is that appropriate timely medical treatment would be rendered to road accident victims. Currently, especially the private health industry is hesitant to admit and treat road accident victims unless they've got on the medical scheme because of fault. In a claim, before the RAF pays, it must first assess who are at fault, and then once it's assessed fault, it has to also determine the apportionment of that. So if you're a private health establishment and you treat a road crash victim currently, you're not sure whether you get paid because of the fault principle, and if you get paid, whether that payment would be reduced or apportioned because of fault. The third component as well is you have to wait for payment because of the cash constraints that I've had. But those are two important considerations and why access to private health establishment is limited to those without medical skills. In 2010, the Constitutional Court struck down the non-emergency medical tariff. So we're now sitting with an anomaly where a person claiming for emergency medical expenses receives less in terms of that treatment because the emergency medical tariff is still in place. Once he's discharged from the emergency ward and he's stabilized, the non-emergency medical treatment is not tariffed at all, and you're able to recover more than what you would under the emergency medical treatment. It makes the administration of part medical expenses and payment very complex. So what this amendment proposes is to remove the dual tariff system and implement a single medical tariff, which the intention for which is to be market related. The Constitutional Court had given guidance in its judgment in 2010 saying that the UPSS is not suitable for the road accident scheme. The tariff should ensure that those injured with serious injuries have access to the treatment they require, and if that is a private health establishment, the tariff must accommodate that. Currently, the settlement of funeral claims is still fault-based. You have to prove 1% wrongdoing on the part of the wrongdoer, which also delays the settlement in terms of these claims. So one of the proposals here is to remove fault in the respect of funeral claims. Just to clarify, the removal of fault in the respect of the funeral claim does not extend to the loss of support claim. So the family would still have to remove fault in the respect of loss of support claim. In addition to the removal of fault, the proposal is for there to be a cap introduced at 10,000 rand limited to defined items listed in column 4 in the presentation. This would clarify what to entitle to claim, and everyone would be treated the same. At this point in time, if you are a well-off person and you can afford a bigger, larger, more expensive funeral, we pay for that. If you can't afford that, you get less. So the cross-subsidization of the roof by the poor is limited by the implementation of this amendment. Section 23 of our Act governs prescription in terms of claims. So what that means is that you've got a set time period within which to lodge your claim with the fund, and then an additional time period in which to finalize the claim, and if not, to issue summons to interrupt prescription. However, the current Act only deals with identified claims. In other words, claims where you know who the wrongdoer is. We've also got hit-and-run claims, so-called hit-and-run claims, and the prescription regime in terms of hit-and-run claims is dealt with in the regulations. The challenge with that is that the current regulations provide that prescription runs against minors and people who are legally incapacitated, which is unconstitutional. We recently had a Comberon judgment which dealt with the predecessor to the current set of regulations, where it was found unconstitutional. What we're trying to do is to remedy the unconstitutionality by allowing or providing for the alignment of the prescription regime. So regardless of whether it's an identified claim or a hit and run claim, you have 3 years in which to lodge, 2 years in which to finalize, and prescription would not run against someone who is subject to a legal disability. The financial implications. It is expected that, for instance, the no-fault provisions in terms of the 30-day no-fault medical plan would add liability to the fund. But if you think about it in the longer term, if a claimant or a road accident victim receives appropriate treatment when it's required soon after the accident, the likelihood of a better treatment outcome is there. A better treatment outcome would, in the longer term, translate in potentially into earlier return to work and a less severe injury. So on other heads of damages such as general damages and lost earnings, there's a potential saving for the fund. Although the 30-day no-fault medical treatment component may cost us more in the short term. The state of advisors have advised that this goal should be dealt with within Section 75. Draft bill, in terms of consultation, the bill was presented for comment on 3 November 2014. There's a list of commentators under bullet point 2. The department considered and incorporated comments where appropriate. The state law advisor gave input on the bill. Amendments were incorporated. Aspect in relation to the bill which was addressed. It was in a long title, it referred to definition as opposed to definitions plural. The bill was presented to the economic sector supporting the infrastructure development cluster, the cabinet committee on 26 October. Cabinet approved it on 2 November 2016 and the bill was introduced in Parliament on 7 February 2017. So who stands to benefit from the proposed amendments? First, if you look at the road crash victim, the constitutional concern related to prescription will be addressed. So if you're a hit and run claimant, the current discrimination will fall away. More road crash victims will gain access to benefits under the scheme because of the no-fault provision. Timely access to effective medical treatment may result in improved treatment outcomes and earlier return to work. Cross-subsidization of rich by the poor will be reduced. Claim complexity will be reduced, cost will be reduced, and the red tape will be reduced. The RAF will benefit in that the constitutional concerns relating to prescription will be addressed. And that would also deal with current legal challenges in relation to those provisions. Medical expenditure liability will be regulated through a single medical tariff, which would assist in claims processing. Complexity would be reduced. timely access to effective medical treatment may result in improved treatment outcomes, earlier return to work, and a consequent reduction in the liability in relation to future medical expenses, loss of income, and general damages. Scan complexity and administration costs will be reduced, litigation costs will be reduced, and adherence to the cash management plan may improve. Improved service delivery as a result of a reduction in the rate type is also a consequence of this. Department of Health will benefit in that private health establishments will treat more road crash victims, reducing the burden on the Department of Health. Private health establishments will benefit in that the risk associated with non-recovery of expenses and fees is reduced through an initial no-fault claim period and an market-related single medical payout. Who stands to lose from the amendments? Attorneys may recover reduced fees. This will be because of less litigation due to the no-fault provision, reduced disputes related to recoverable funeral expenses, reduced disputes related to non-emergency versus emergency medical expenses, reduced litigation to recover a cost contribution, and reduced fees related to serious injury assessments. Medical assessors will recover less fees in respect of a reduction in the number of assessments in relation to serious injury because of the prescribed list of serious injuries. We consequently request the portfolio committee to note the content of the Right Action Condemnation Bill, and we request the committee to consider and approve the bill for further process. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there additions from the department? Advocate Masumbu?
No, thank you, Chair. That was
Musashi, we apologize for having started in your absence.
I was struggling for practice, but my apologies for the incoming. I tried to for practice.
Luciano.
Thank you.
Hello. Honorable members, there we are. Honorable Jumsinda. Any issue? Okay. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation, Mr. Valencia. Chair, firstly, I would like to put on record that I recall on the 3rd of March 2015, we requested a workshop on the ramps. Let's be clear on this. A lot of the elements which we are currently seeing and observing in the form of amendments to the Road Accident Fund, quite clear that it's the ideal intention of a lot of the elements that were covered under RABS, which now appear as subtle amendments to the Road Accident Fund. So it's quite clear that there's been a change in strategy and that we are seeing more and more of what before appeared under the RABS code. So therefore, Chair, I would like to put it on record that to this day, since the 3rd of March 2015, this request was accepted by the committee, we have still not had a workshop on RABS. And this is of a serious concern because there's a lot of pressure on the Road Accident Fund, which we are all aware of, and that certainly needs to be addressed. And therefore, this committee expressed its desire to engage around what needs to be done to alleviate that financial pressure, because it's not only a financial pressure on the Road Accident Fund, but also on victims and on stakeholders within the industry. So therefore, Chair, in mentioning it a third time, this is a request on the 3rd of March 2015, and to this day still we haven't had a workshop on that. Yet, we are seeing these amendments now, which clearly does not signal something kind from the department side in terms of how we then go about it. Instead of having a proper workshop, instead of addressing this face-to-face, it's now sidestepped in a way in order to get it through without what we requested from our side.
Honorable member, before you proceed, it's a good point that you raised. You would recall that when we requested the workshop, the minister indicated that the bill still has to serve in cabinet. Don't you think that in view of the fact that it has served in cabinet, if I'm correct, maybe we should now rearrange that we get a workshop? And the critical issues that we are raising, that it looks like there's a harvest from the RAPS bill into the amendment, those are the things that we can be able to arrest, to raise again when we have a workshop. This to me is a proposal that I think we should write to the minister and indicate to him that we are supposed to have a workshop on RAPS now that it has served in cabinet, so that we are able to have serious acquaintance. And as we are processing through this critical amendment, we are able to say, can you see this, which actually we believe are the issues that must be addressed.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I can appreciate what you say. We are also aware that RAPS has been published for comment. However, specifically in light of what you say, acknowledging the fact that it was approved by Cabinet on the 29th of March this year, we haven't had or seen any indication of those comments. We are not aware of any comments or any contributions from stakeholders or any change in what we saw previously up to this stage. Yet we are now confronted to consider bill and ask here that today we must approve this bill after one presentation of serious changes to a principal act. And we are not aware of any of the elements that was contributed to NEDLAC, which was also a process that was completed before it went to Cabinet. So it just leaves us somewhat in the shade or in the dark, and which is not nice in terms of the contribution that we as a committee need to make in this whole process. To arrive at this point where we now just have to approve things without having any input in terms of the previous process. What were the inputs, what were the contributions from stakeholders, what were the opinions of people that certainly reacted to the comments after this was published? So these are a bit cold, Chair, and a bit disillusioned.
Warm up.
So Chair, if we get to the presentation, then if I may carry on with your permission, there are about 18 sections to this bill, which I've summarized to a couple of opinions. Firstly, I've got a serious concern around the accessibility issue, because it seems that there would be no financial support to any victim that would be left unable to engage with the administrator. And this is now in the bigger scheme of where we're going to. And then in terms of affordability, what we're seeing here is a dual design. We currently have a default system under the Road Accident Fund in its current form, and what's being asked for here today is a next new system that would run parallel to this. So we'll have a dual system. And I can't see this being cheaper. I can't see this dual system to function under a dual administrative financial load to then be cheaper, as you put it. I'm also concerned about the fact that there's been a court judgment, and the essence of that court judgment in 2010 was that the tariffs need to be clear. The tariffs need to be predetermined. There must be a prescribed tariff in terms of number and amount, and which medical care would be given to those accident victims. Those were the three elements within that judgment that was passed on the 25th of November 2010. And here again, we are asked to consider and approve a bill mentioning this tariff, but no number. We've got no amount, so it's not determined yet. So on what basis then, Mr. Willemsen, can you say that it would be cheaper and better if the tariff is not being, if that's not known yet? I know it needs to be determined, but on what basis then do you tell us it will be cheaper and cost effective and therefore a better dispensation than what we had before? If the tariff isn't known, which is a huge cost implication, a number which is applicable to each and every claim under this new proposed dispensation. How can you make the calculation then if that tariff isn't known to say that it would be cheaper, better and cost effective? Then, Chair, parallel to what I'm describing now, we are still then in a position where we have to financially carry the burden of the current system. So this is in addition to. So therefore it cannot be cheaper and it cannot be more efficient. See, my next point relates to the important rehabilitation mandate which is proposed within this scheme, which relies heavily on the National Health Insurance, which we know is not in place. So therefore this is also an attempt to make use of private hospitals and private health care. But again, even to those stakeholders, it is not known what they would get paid in this very limited 30-day period. And then the 30-day period is of a huge concern, because that is the term or the period in which the most expensive health care would be needed for a patient. But what happens after 30 days? What happens if a patient needs to be in health care for longer than 30 days? Because now, in all fairness to the service provider, at this stage, not knowing what they would get paid, because the tariffs hasn't been determined, would they get paid after 30 days, or would you have the very awkward situation of patients having to move out of health care into another facility because they only have a 30-day period? So this is not thought through, and there's a number of concerns which really wave red flags on this. Then, say, I'm also worried about the 10,000 rand limit on funeral cover. We should all be well aware of what funeral costs are, and the 10,000 rand is just not adequate. The average cost of a funeral exceeds much to bigger amounts and further than that. There are also some constitutional issues around this chair which relates to the exclusion of various classes of victims. Chair, I can't see, in summary, then I can't see that victims would be better off under these clauses which seeks to amend the principal bill. I can also not see how the road accident fund can be better off financially and administratively with the impact of this new changes in the whole new system which is proposed parallel to the current one. And because these tariffs and numbers are not known, I think all of this is premature. There's a lot of additional work that needs to be done, of which the tariff structure is the most important one. And I'm really worried that we are confronted here with assumptions of a cheaper dispensation without numbers being calculated which such assumptions could have been based on. And I'm really worried about what we listened to here this morning, and I would request that we also ask the Minister to do a proper regulatory impact assessment, because definitely what we see here should be subject to proper research on economic implications, economic impact for the victim, for the road accident fund, because as I see it, it's likely to have a really negative impact, and we would have to deal with broader consequences if we make this decision yesterday. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Humsinga. After being informed by the Secretary to the committee that the RAP bill is just awaiting the parliamentary processes, and then definitely it will come to us. And I think if it's here in the parliamentary committee, probably the workshop that we were anticipating from the minister can be done when we are dealing with the bill. So I think it will be fair that we look into and await the processes in parliament for the bill to come to us. Honorable Deflator.
To the chair, I really do think we need a workshop so that as members we're more informed, so more details. Before choosing the process, and the workshop is going to happen quite soon. Other comments is, I think we need to see all the comments that were submitted, so that we're also informed what different stakeholders have to say. And we can assess it for ourselves. And these are some questions I have. The proposal talks about a serious injury list. Who determines what goes on the list? What criteria are used to decide what's on that list? And if we could have an example. And how, is it a live list? Does it change occasionally? And if so, what criteria are used to add or subtract items on that list? And what guarantees that there would be a reduction in litigation if there were such a list? I mean, just off the top of my head, I'm imagining there'd be a lot of challenges with people for one or other reason, the fact that it's on the list or the fact that it's not on the list. We're just interested in doing like that. And then, it talks here about payment of compensation for the immediate 30 days after the road crash. And that's all well and fine, but it's very specifically worded here, where it says it's the first 30 days compensation. What I'm interested in is what happens on the first 30 days after the road incident, after the crash. Will that person who is being badly injured or otherwise have immediate access to medical care and hospitalization and so forth? That's actually an important part. Trying to get compensation afterwards, we can always worry about later. So reading between the lines, I'm kind of seeing here that yes, they'll compensate people for the first 15 days, that's great. They're not saying we're going to be looking after the injured child or whoever the minute that that person's, the ambulance arrives on the scene. I'd like that, that to me is more important. You can always worry about payment afterwards. I think people don't care about payment afterwards, but immediately. What I'm interested in is making sure that patient, that victim is dealt with. So that can be just explained a little more. And then what will guarantee that those road crash victim will be admitted to a hospital, and what hospital would he or she be admitted to? If it's a government hospital, what are the guarantees that that person be prioritized or not? And if it's a private institution, why would that institution accept that person? And then I've been interested to hear about, and I'm not expecting the detailed answer now because this is a loaded question, is has this been costed? You know, you're not guaranteeing the first 30 days payment, treatment payment, has this been costed? And if so, I believe you've seen that. You've asked the question that I wanted to be clear. I'm also asking this to me after the 30 days, but I'm not asking for my colleague to ask that. Chair, the next question I have is with regards funeral expenses, and limited to 10,000 Rand, which I won't deal with because my colleagues asked the question, but what I do want to ask is, what's the limit or criteria as to how this 10,000 Rand is used? So I'll give an example. If a body, for whatever reason, needs to be stored for quite a while, it means that it's going to cost. And there'll be considerable difference in cost if a person is stored for a day, or say the body is stored for a day or two, as opposed to 2 or 3 weeks. So what are the criteria? What are the time frames in this regard, and so forth? And practically speaking, what happens when the 10,000 units is gone? And it's a purpose? You know, what happens in those cases? They're just thrown by the way. And then, if the presentation of the other documents talk about timely access to effective medical treatment, which goes to what I was my first question. What does that mean? Does it mean that a person once they've been smashed on the streets and they've got all sorts of broken bones, whatever that is, they need to get immediate medical attention? That's the important thing. And I'm going to repeat it again. I actually don't give a damn about paying the doctors or the lawyers or anybody. You know, they can be sorted out later. What happens to the victim in the road that's just been hurt? And it says here, timely access to effective medical treatment. What does that mean? Does it mean that immediate access? Does it mean that we still need to sort out all the red tape first, and then, by then that person do it? Completely. So that could be unpacked. And also, the costing, as I mentioned, also talks about in slide 27 that the red tape will be reduced. And I'd like to know some examples of how this would be the case. But the more I read about this, the more red tape it appears to be. It would need to be red tape in order for the system to work. So that could be explained. And I understand that a lot of these questions the presenters may not be able to provide us immediately. And I'm quite happy to receive something in writing. And then, the other one is, it does, and my colleague has covered it, I'm very concerned about the single medical tariff. And I've looked at all the documentation here and done some other research over the weekend, and nowhere in any media statements or anything that's been released by the Road Action Fund has explained what the medical tariff is, how it's been calculated, and so forth. And I'm left speechless that everything hinges on this tariff. And it's not once been explained. There's not even a hint of a calculation of how it can be calculated and so forth. So, and again, I understand that the answer can't be provided now. I'm quite happy I'd rather, in fact, get a detailed mathematical explanation that needs to be shared back to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honourable Jacinta, Honourable Jonathan.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Maybe the money is my own shop. This proposal really does unlock the advertising of the bill and the public comment, and then come back and have a more detailed discussion based on the conversation. If I'm right, then I will not ask all the questions, because really the process is only by the beginning of the process to unfold. But I was struck by one of the points that was made by the presenter, is the one amendment where the act describes that the minister will do something, and then the minister says, no, the fund must do it. Now, the amendment now seeks to go back to the position in the Act. and then why we need an amendment to do what the Act already described has not be done. Isn't it the executive function that has to correct itself? If they're given the power to the inappropriate body, which belongs to itself, it's simply an amendment of the regulation. The regulation is an executive function, not the executive function. So that surprised me that it's something that the Minister of Transport could do. The Minister of Transport could do. It has nothing to do with the Transport Act. And also, there are a number of things that we can have a lot of money to go to have a workshop and we really going to be at the time. We want to have tons and tons of comments that is going to come in. And I don't think that we will have to do or die here at this point. But there are things that are worrying. For an example, this issue, and I don't want to belabor the point. The description of what is called serious accident, the list that must be developed. And anything that is not part of the list is excluded. If it's not part of it, it can't be dealt with, it must be dealt through the legal process, go through court, in order for that to be something that is excluded seriously. Now, there isn't, I don't know what the definition of that would be. I want to see what, if you say this constitutes serious, what that means in terms of it. Then the next question that is in the realm of today's family practice and domestic. I don't know how you define the definition of a funeral service, the cost of a funeral service. What is it? How do you look at it? It was, say, 10,000 rand, the money maximum of 10,000 rand. But in effect, we still don't know what you're talking about. How do you define it? And what was the calculation that takes you to 10,000 men to constitute what you call a funeral service or funeral cost associated to that? Maybe Mr. Valentin can explain and say this is how we calculated it. We see the coffin is going to cost so much, the food is going to cost so much. Anything that is outside of this does not fall part of this. So that's all we're making a contribution. Or this is a fund contribution towards the funeral service. So if it is, let's define it properly. Because if the funeral cost of the funeral service is 30,000 rand, and you have defined it as a funeral cost, a funeral cost of 10,000 rand, you would say, whoa. My cost, my limit is 10,000 rand. I'm not paying any cent beyond that because it's already in the end. Somebody will say, listen, this actually is no cost because the coffin cost 10,000 rand. There was not even food in it. There was not even a car in it. There was not even this in it. So then we get into that long, not a food litigation because then somebody must be able to intervene to draw all of it. What is reasonable or not reasonable, or what? So I think that Mr. Ramsey, saying there's more to be discussed in order for us to be able to determine that. Certainly, this is your suggestion. We may come to a different determination as a community to say you had the intention was to save costs, and you accept that you had to cut the cost to a 10,000 rand because that was the intention of what was to be able to manage that. But if we do a different calculation, yes, and you come up with a different figure, that would be what you change in law. You know, what you change, okay, but this is not understanding. This was a fun fact. Because I don't know what it's going on. I don't want to belabor the point, but I'm just seeing that as one issue. Then there are a number of other issues about whether the PTA is minimizing it in terms of the 30-day period and what happens on the first day. I think that question has already been asked in terms of it. Because some of the accidents, depending on it, depending on what either, how serious the matter was, it may go beyond the day. If some of the accidents take 60 days, 90 days, so what then happens? Something has to be activated, and what is the link to that what needs to be activated on the first day or on the 31st day of this accident? So, Chair, my questions are quite general in terms of it, but where I'm on the end is that this is just the beginning of the process. Our attempt is the beginning of the process, the first salvo to it. While the process goes to the end, we're going to agree that it should be advertised for this particular period, and then we will then have to sit down and have a more thorough engagement with the department about this, so that we can at least share some of these things. And I think this is totally in our hands. I think we should manage that process.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ramachandran. I think now it becomes very complex in a way. How about the committee, instead of us advertising the bill now, wait for the RAPS bill to come here, and then we look into similarities before we advertise, and probably we may want to advertise both bills at the same time, so that we're able to have an idea. Because when we go into a workshop as proposed here in the committee, it will mean that we will have to also look into those things which are coming, which we believe they look the same. We will also look into the other things. I was also just worried about the question of the funeral expenses and expenditures. We are able to look into that because it opens a very wide range of things as to what do we mean when you say these are the expenses. What is entailed in the whole situation of expenses? And then we are able to say how do we move forward. This is a proposal that I make it to the committee to say maybe we just need to get the other bill coming in. We work on this one fine. And then when the other bill comes, we get a thorough workshop as proposed. We look into the similarities, and then when we go out on advertising for comments, then we have everybody and everything having been taken on board. We get the comments and we're able to move. Honourable Member, okay, agreeable. Sure, thank you. Honourable Sibandi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought I should make a summary after which the throne is something, but nevertheless, we have to on the council. I think we are sharing the very same sentiment. Chairperson, you see, already there was a court judgment which is all part of the guidelines. Some years ago about some of the incidents, and already there were comments from the Law Society of South Africa. I don't know whether it was taken them on board about some of their concerns. And then which I said previously, I'm also going to echo or to include certain examples. Some of the cases which are not paid by the car, which I'm worried to actually. If you are the driver of the car or the owner of a car which is responsible for the accident, you don't pay. Then also, if you were the only person involved in the accident, then also you are the same. So my worry is that, you know, like in our day, we have hands that you have. Practical example, some moving issue out of the road, and nobody is prepared to witness that incident. Only to find the driver of that particular car, the breadwinner, at his own home, when he passed off. What are you going to do? What is the family going to do? And then also, with that issue of the 10,000 rand, just to one of the family members passed on at close to a century. The family, well, that was a great winner. Nobody had a premium income. Before you open your mouth, it's all right, they had some of the house. Who's supposed to take responsibility? Because that person must be transported. Plus minus 1,000, nearly 2,000 from the time, to be buried at home. So where's the 10,000? What about those people? And then check this out. Also, there is something which is worrying me. That one of which I was looking at until introduction of slide number 2, whereby you say, you promote the safe of all South African roads. But if you said all, yes, it's all, but what about the people who live there, like the drivers, they're not safe at all. And then slide number 3, the person about the challenge on slide number 3, last paragraph, where it says, expensive foreign claims are a thing of the past, due to the operational level, you see. To me, it's very specific. I'll put an example. Our argument in the past was the current. Because I'll set some examples, 3 examples. The thing which triggered lots of noise was a certain German guy who was paid, I don't know how many months, for something million rand. If you convert that money to rent, because they demanded him to be paid in foreign currency. And I just asked myself, with another 2 incidents, one bus crash at P3 in Mpumalanga, I wonder those foreign people, how much were they paid, if they were being paid in their foreign currency. And then one incident in Ladybeck in Mpumalanga, again, bus crash, foreign people, how much was spent? You see, I would be happy or comfortable if they are indicating that they give us how do they solve this problem. Because we don't say that people from foreign must indicate. But our word was current. Because some people, they wanted to convert the current, and we knew very well that some of the accidents were fabricated. A person to get a lump sum, ripping off for something and going away with that money. So that was, but here, you are saying the thing of the past, but how? You didn't specify that in any sense. And then again, a certain sense, you see, the issue of the workshop, I really don't understand why it took so long. I wonder why it took so long in my conversion family. Because it was going to release some of the things. But the proposal, yes, colleagues are correct that it was proposed some time ago. We're supposed to get that workshop before public opinion, because it was going to guide us how to safeguard ourselves and how to we support you in terms of your proposal, in terms of the movement which you're talking about. And then, Chester said, let me leave there. I had a lot of questions to ask, but since my colleagues, I think, share the very same sentiment,
a little difficult to go on and on with some of the questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sibande. I think we are all agreeing that we, once the RAPS bill comes here, we will have a workshop. Remember in 2015 when we requested the workshop, the minister indicated that it's not going to be possible for us to have the workshop before this bill is agreed to by the executive. And now that the bill is here in our shop, once it gets sent to the portfolio committee, then we will have a workshop, as I have indicated, for us to be able to look into a number of factors which will be able to make both the amendments in this current, as they are, and the RAPS bill, the way we want to engage on it. Another one?
Mbanda. No, thank you, Chair. First of all, let me align myself with what all the colleagues have proposed in terms of the workshops and what you have also proposed in terms of putting those bills together in terms of making sure that we look at the similarity. Of course, I think let me just also welcome the work that the department has done. And I think we need to commend them because I think they've put so much thought in what they are proposing. But of course, as the other colleagues have said, that there seems to be quite a number of gaps that need to be addressed. When I look at the objectives of the bill and the two bullets, and which Steve talked about, enable improved cash management, enable timely, efficient, and cost-effective delivery of compensation. When I just listened to the presentation, I didn't find something that actually taking us to that direction, in the full sense of what is being proposed. And I think there is still room for improvement to improve, to make sure that at the end of the day, those objectives that have been highlighted there, they are actually achieved. Chair, on page 9, the medical practitioner, the definition there, I just want to check, is it also, I don't know. I don't know what the Act entails, but does that also include the traditional medical practitioner? Because I mean, there is this perception that we have, or the impression that we only confine, medical practitioner in the Western understanding, and forgetting that we are also living in an African continent, and the scope then should be broadened when it deals with those ones, because not all the people only go to the Western, medical practitioners, but you also have situations where they go to. But now, here on page 9, it talks about medical practitioner means registered as such. Now, in a South African context, I don't know how to deal with this one, because I don't think that you've got all of them registered, particularly those who are doing practicing traditional African medicine. And I don't know how the bill is going to deal with that matter and incorporate, because it must reflect the reality of the South African situation. And then, Chair, I don't want to deal with the issue of the funeral, because I think it has been spoken a lot about it. But on page 19, I just want to check because we've all been talking about the tariff. I think the elephant in the room here is the issue of dealing with the tariffs. They are not specified. Our colleagues have raised this issue quite a number of times. But it also says that they shall debate on the tariff prescribed after consultation with the Minister of Health. Now, I just want to check, has that process of consultation with the Minister of Health started? Because if it has not, then you talk about tariffs now that are going to after consultation with the Minister. And if the process has not started, when are you anticipating to start the process, because I think it's critical that the issue is fast track, you know, so that it will then give you the whole issue of the current. Chairperson, I think without elaborating too much after the proposal that you have made, I think those are both the issues, and I think it's work in progress, and we're looking forward that when the process will be taken forward and then engage better. But thank you very much, Chair, for the work that the department has put so far.
Thank you,
everyone.
Honorable Sambu. Page 7 of your slide is the answer. Bullet 4. You indicate that we authorize the Minister of Transport to prescribe a list of injuries that are automatically deemed severe. I think for me, it is probably from a health point of view, it will be important that it says in consultation with the Minister of Health, because the Minister of Transport may not necessarily have the resources, the knowledge, and the skills to can be able to identify the list of injuries that are deemed severe. So to me, I look into this, that most of the things that have got a bearing on the health of a person, we should also consider our sister department, which will be working in for current. And I think there is somewhere where you're talking of social security net aspect, which to me, I believe your social security net, you're talking to beyond injury if you're disabled, what really happened. And that I also take cognizance of the fact that we should not be seen to be, as government departments, duplicating or fighting for turf and space, but we should be able to say, who is in charge with social security aspect or social security net, and were able to say, in the eventuality I am disabled, you have dealt with all the processes, then I belong to the Department of Social Development in this regard. It comes out of your ambit, and that department is able to really take the processes forward. In the eventuality, there are other things and other things that will be needed for argument's sake, processes and other related matters. It will be the Department of Social Development and the Department of Health who will be taking the process forward. You have dealt with the aspect of what was critical at that particular moment, and now you are able to hand it over to the specialists who can be able to deal with the processes forward. Mr. Velan said, together with the advocate, Masombuka and the team YT, I'm going to allow you to respond to the issues that have been raised by the members, but at the same time, I think it will be important, Mr. Singh, that you start preparing a workshop for the members on both, probably maybe even consider the fact of you starting to look at both the bills, the similarities and every other thing, so that when we come into that workshop, we will be making additions here and there. We will be looking at, are the bills really desirable because it is us as Parliament we should be able to say the desirability of this bill. Are we really happy as Parliament can say we go a full length of the parliamentary processes? Mr. Valance, Mr. Mutazin, Advocate Waiti, you will decide what you, who will do what.
Thanks, Chair. Mr. Valance, can you start with the answering or responding to the question that you raised?
I think let's start with the tariff, the single medical tariff. Work has been done across the tariff. There's a draft report which will be finalized and will be provided in the country. It's based on assumptions because the tariff cannot be accommodated in the principal act. What is envisaged is an empowering provision that would authorize the minister to regulate the tariff. So a draft tariff would be developed. Published for public comments should be considered and then the final tariff would be implemented. So it is impossible to today determine the exact cost of that tariff or what would be paid. The intention, however, is for this tariff to be comprehensive and to be aligned to what the Constitutional Court guarantee is, to ensure that road accident victims have access to every kind of treatment required to deal with traumatic injuries. The intention for it is to be market-related, because this is where RAPS is also going. The RAPS dispensation looks at providing rehabilitation as the primary objective, and this bill gets us there as well. In terms of the funeral benefit, the 10,000 cap was set at the time when the bill was published. That was an average cost in the road accident fund in 2014. It provides for a defined list of items which under the current dispensation would be considered necessary costs in relation to a funeral. Because we still operate in a common law system on based on insurance principles, all that this amendment does is codifies what a person would currently be entitled to claim in terms of if you itemize the body. For instance, food is not covered, a headstone is not covered under the current dispensation. If you look at the 10,000 Rand, it also allows a claim where no claim is currently possible. So in an example where you have a single motor vehicle accident, the person drove off the road for whatever reason and died as a result of the accident, there is no current claim under the current dispensation. What this amendment achieves because of the no-fault provision is that those claimants or the family of those deceased persons would be able to now claim funeral costs where they're currently not able to. It's got an open-ended liability that's created, that's why the cap is necessary to manage the cost to the fund. The intent is to set it as a reasonable contribution towards funeral expenses, because funeral expenses is something we all incur regardless of whether you die as a result of a road crash. It's different to the other types of compensation that we have to provide, because it's not a certainty that you lose if the injury in respect to the other head of damage. In terms of the list of serious injuries, I need to just explain how the current dispensation operates. An example, for instance, what is envisaged on the list is if you're a quadriplegic or a paraplegic, the framework as it stands today requires you, although we already know that this injury would qualify as serious, to submit to an assessment by a medical practitioner. So that medical practitioner could issue a rough fall serious injury report, which report would confirm that yes, you are a paraplegic, and because you're a paraplegic, because of the AMA guide, your whole person impairment is assessed as 10% or higher. For that reason, the fund is required to pay your general damages if you qualify in terms of merit. That's where we are now. What will be on this list are those injuries that we are certain that if you go through the formal process, the result would be a positive finding of serious injury. But if the amendment is implemented, someone that is rendered a paraplegic in a road crash would not have to go through that whole process. and the associated costs related to this and inconvenience. Because there will be an upfront list that says the following list of injuries we acknowledge would be serious if this person had gone through the formal process. But it's not necessary to do so because we acknowledge that these injuries are being serious. This is then also the mention made in terms of the object of the act. And the red tape. It reduces red tape in this sense because we acknowledge upfront that this injury, this person who is rendered a paraplegic, would qualify for general damages. We don't, as we currently have to, send this person off for a second assessment by a medical practitioner at considerable cost and inconvenience to the person and also cost to the RAF, where we already know that the injury qualifies as serious. So that reduces the red tape. It also makes it more cost effective in delivering the compensation to the general damages. So that's what they alluded to in the objects of the law. And one example of it. The list will be developed, and there has already been engagement to try and develop a list that captures every potential injury that, if it were to be assessed under the AMA, would qualify as serious. A draft list was developed with input from some of the medical practitioners that sit on the Health Professional Council's appeals boards. There were various industry experts engaged to develop it. But it will similarly go through a public consultation process. So the draft list will be published by the Minister for public comment. Various stakeholders will provide the input, the list will be adjusted and finally regulated. There was a comment that the tariff is premature in terms of the link with NHI. Nothing in this bill or the RAS bill requires the National Health Insurance Scheme to be in place. It's been two independent events. The legislation doesn't contemplate NHI to be in place for this to be implemented. So there is no dependency. I need to explain the benefit to a claimant and the access. There aren't any guarantees in this bill. The Road Accident Fund or the state can guarantee that a patient involved in a road accident would be prioritized in terms of private health care or provincial health care. There are medical considerations prior to that will deal with who will get treatment first, depending on the injury. But I want to just explain a scenario. Let's take the same scenario that I had as an example. A person drives home from work. He's tired, falls asleep behind the wheel, drives into a tree. He does not die because of the accident, but it's the same serious injury. A private ambulance arrives at the scene. Because it's a road accident, and because there's a likelihood that the patient doesn't have a medical scheme, is not a member of a medical scheme, that ambulance would most probably, in most of the cases, take this patient to a provincial health facility for treatment. As often happens, those facilities are under huge pressure. They may not be timely and appropriate treatment available to this patient. Also under the current dispensation, because the fault is still a consideration, there is no claim against the road accident fund. So from the private health industry, firstly, they are not sure that they're going to recover any fees or disbursements from this injured person. So they're not going to treat it, because there's a risk to them. That's why these patients are currently dropped off at provincial health. And their treatment outcome is not optimal. This amendment changes that in that the treatment after for the 30 day period immediately after the accident for the next 30 day premium, for the next 30 day period, which this person would not receive currently, now becomes an option. Because from a private health establishment point of view, fault is removed from the equation. We, the RAF, play the role of a medical specialist. There's some certainty in it with regards to the recovering as a supplier from the road accident fund, the treatment and associated costs incurred for that first 30-day period. And we cannot leave it open-ended because we cannot afford it. But that is what the RAFs does, and we'll get into that when we get to that presentation. It totally removes fault. So the risk to the supplier is equally removed, although only partially in terms of this proposal. So the, another comment was in terms of the object, it's not clear how we arrive at an improved cash management, how the bill improves cash management. The amendment to section 15 of the principal allows for a process in terms of which risk is being managed, or in time allow for the RAF to better manage risk. Currently, we are faced with a problem walking into an office, detaching furniture, computers, and removing it. And we have to pay those risks out of funds that we don't have. We don't have enough funds to pay every debt that's due currently. What this mechanism provides for is that we'll get upfront notice of those judgments where a risk is potentially a potential outcome, and even when the sheriff does arrive, there's a time period allowed within which to manage payments to the sheriff, which would then enable us to better manage the with the available cash payment of those risks in a manner that would hopefully not result in the interruptions that we currently see with assets being attached and removed. So I'm hoping I'm clarifying the object there. Section 15. In terms of duplication, sorry Chair, that was your comment. In terms of duplication, there shouldn't be duplication between the RAF Act and amendments and social development. The mention of social security in the presentation is, I'm quoting the Constitutional Court that has stated that the Road Accident Fund plays an important part of the social security safety net, in that it provides certain benefits not otherwise available under self-sovereign and other schemes. And it's not our intention to usurp any of those functions or to encroach on their mandates. But the point of the matter is that these proposed amendments move us closer to social security in that fault in the limited sense of certain instances are removed, and it does provide for wider access to road accident victims. So more, even under the amendment, more accident victims would access benefits other than otherwise the cash currency, and much more so under ads. Although this is an incremental move. Then in terms of the statement in relation to foreigners, that amendment took place under the previous amendment bill. It came into effect on 1 August 2008. And what was enacted was a cap on income and family and loss of earnings. So there's a statutory cap in rand, which deals with the foreign exchange issue. It also caps the value of those claims in rand. It's a cap that's administered by the Road Accident Fund, adjusted quarterly for inflation. And the matter was the claimant was shosh. We paid out in excess of 500 million rand on the claim. That's not including the cost and manufacturing fees. And such claims are no longer possible under the current dispensation. So that's been dealt with. That is not, it's not one of the objects of one of the amendments in this law.
I think what I will say, I'll also echo the sentiment raised by Honorable Ramatakane, and also the process that you have alluded to in terms of the process that needs to unfold going forward. Because as you correctly point out, we need to streamline the two processes in terms of the RAF and the current area process to see if ever what can we speed up in terms of those two pieces of legislation and prioritize, because what's basically going to come out of both the RAF and the current one is the same kind of comments and input that will be submitted, because what is of priority to other department is to try and speed up the current dilemma that we find ourselves in as the Department of Transport and the Road Accident Fund in terms of having the RAL being able to sustain and to pay benefits. And it's critical that some of these processes that hamper us in the delivery of the service, we clearly speed up those processes, because it's important that the default aspect be removed in terms of the requirements, because this is the impediment that ensures that certain claimants cannot claim for certain benefits because of the false aspect of it. And also there's a cost implication that accompanies us proving the false aspect. It delays the processing of the road accident claims and the payment of victims. So as our plea is obviously to try and fast track and speed up the consultative process so that we are able to deal with what we currently experience as a road accident fund in terms of the assessment of our bank accounts and us not being able basically to pay the claims that we are supposed to be paid, and also to pay the service providers that are supposed to be catering or providing the services to all those institutions that require the service. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jefferson. Ms. Dom doesn't cover me.
Chairperson, my surname is Ikima Kakela. Okay, thanks very much.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Chair, I think a lot has been said by my colleagues in response to the questions that were raised by the honorable member. But over and above, I think the department has noted the concerns that were raised with regard to the workshop that was supposed to be facilitated prior or immediately after the approval of the bill by cabinet, and that will be there be noted, and also the comments that were required in terms of the written through the ministry. So those will also be followed. I think in brief, I can say we are very thankful that we are here, and then we have shared with the committee and also with the member honourable members what they entails in the bill, and moving forward. Remember, this is the beginning, and moving forward, we'll be working together in order to make sure that the bill becomes a reality.
Honourable members, Honourable Musinga, can see your hand. Any other? Honourable Musinga, Honourable Dispraters, Honourable Mlauzi. Before I give to Honourable Humsinga, let me welcome the two young men, Honourable Advocate and Honourable Khadebe, who joined us almost at the tail end, and say that it's better late than never. We appreciate your presence in this meeting. Honourable Humsinga.
Thank you, sir. In general, I'm still not convinced that we are solving a problem with this incident. The problem is that the road accident fund is running out of funds. And this proposal, I'm simply convinced, will add to additional costs. And this suggestion to, in principle, get rid of fault will increase claims, because we are opening up new categories of claims.
How can this ever lead to a site? I don't understand that. So, Chair, I welcome your support in the idea of having a workshop that would certainly add a lot of value and understanding, but I cannot see how these proposals can lead to a saving for the voters. We are opening up additional categories of claims, which is a great thing, because more victims will be able to claim. So I am in great support of that. But to then support that with a statement that it would lead to saving, I cannot see. Especially, Chair, when we now, after the questions, get the answer that the tariffs have not been determined. It's not finalized. In terms of the suggested 10,000 rand funeral cost, this now is a list of items where certain very important things to some families are excluded. It's referred to as the 10,000 rand that would include necessary costs. Who determines that? What is that list? How is this 10,000 rand then broken up? Who decided on the items of that 10,000 rand? Is that what we want to see going forward? And then further on, where, as we've listened to the scenarios that were sketched by Mr. Balinska, certain claims were excluded that would now be opened up for legitimate claims, also in terms of funeral cover. So it's a second or a third category of claims that would now be opened up and that would add to additional costs. Then the most important one, the list of serious injuries. I still have a huge concern about that. It's quite clear also from the answers that it's at best in a draft format, but not in place at all. And we must see this, because if everything would be included in that list, why is it then necessary to have a list at all? Because then serious injuries would then be serious injuries. But we must also be cautious, Chair, that it's not only injuries of a serious nature in terms of wounds, etc., that should be covered under the responsibility of a social net. Because there are other injuries which are not regarded as serious from an accident that only reveal itself after a while. In terms of nerve-related injuries, which might be excluded. So I'm very cautious about this list that, as we understand now, is still not in place. So those are my concerns there, and I want to start off with the sentence I started. I am not convinced that this approach actually solves the problem which we currently have with no accident fund on the two sides. I'm not convinced of that. I would therefore argue that we first have the workshop before we consider it. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Member Advocate Lau.
Okay. thank you, Mr. Chairperson. And the presentation which I went through just were emailed. So I have some few clarities in question. I understand you are visiting these changes or amending the Principal Act. And I think your aim is to make it easy for you to go to that. And I don't see any reason of you. On the other hand, you are pushing the RAPS, which has been approved by Cabinet in March 2017. On the other hand, you still want the amendment to this Principal Act, which is not going to be useful after the RAPS has been put into a law. There's the issue again about the medical tariffs, which was ruled in the Constitutional Court in November 2010, where the Law Society challenged the minister about the tariffs, that the tariffs must be discussed with the Minister of Health So we don't know whether the timing should be secured or not. Maybe you can clear us on that. I agree with you on the ground, but the issue here is to solve the insolvent of the fund. And we put it very clear that that insolvent of the fund was tailor-made to be an insolvent, thereof to be insolvent. Because people, they disregard Section 24.6a, which clearly says to you that immediately you receive the claim, you have 60 days to negotiate, to settle the matter. But the road exempt fund will just leave it as it is until 60 days expire. It went to court roll, then you negotiate. What was your reason to wait for not to solve within 120 days? So you want to solve, you create the legal cost intentionally, so after 120 days you settle. What did you settle before 120 expired? Now you came here to us and said that this road exempt fund cannot work, while you are even not abiding to your law. The RAF Act is your law. You can read it there, Section 24.6a. So, because we're afraid, we will agree everything, the RAFs will come into an action, but if you still have your lazy people there at the fund, who does not follow the legislation to save the fund, we won't solve the problem. Chairperson, for now, let me stop you.
Thank you. Honourable members, I don't know whether the Singapore needs to last five. Honourable member,
thank you, Chair. I just wanted to, I don't know if the question, but I'm not right now, and that is the process. And I'd like to say that as a committee, we agree that we undertake this workshop to be fully informed, okay. And then, I think that has got to happen quite soon, mm-hmm. Because I would be. And then my suggestion is let's get that workshop done, really thrash out any questions and comments that I have before we then engage us any further. I am concerned about some of the things comments have gone out, some of the talks have gone. Actually, my understanding, and I suspect members' understanding, is that the workshop would happen first before anything else was to be done, and we now see the IAF and the direction of the IAF.
Thank you. Last five, honourable member.
I think that I shouldn't really have questions at this stage, except to say that Mr. Dulles, I hate to try to correct you when you were saying there was a carrot and a stick in the 10,000 bag. And you say, the carrot here, the net is getting widened, wide more, those who are not qualified in what they're taking of the other 4 weeks, they will now go into the field, and therefore, what's the crime? That's the sum total of that perspective. It doesn't wash, it doesn't cut down, that I know. But let's start, first part for now until we get back to that, I said, in a more kind of loose environment, different environment, let's get to that workshop. My understanding, Chair, with the summary of the Chair was that we must combine this discussion. For the bill that is now already coming and this one. So that when we have the workshop, because there is there is something that is here and it's also something that is another book. So let's have those workshops, join the workshop,
on both so that we can see those in terms of what is happening as a result, what is happening as the other one. So I want to agree with that, but let's prepare for that. And that we don't rush into publicizing the skill at the moment. We wait for the other one to be submitted and then we get into discussion and then we publish it all together so that we deal with the interchanges with the function models. So I don't agree with that share that. So let's follow that process. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member Ramakwakada. I just give this opportunity to Honorable Member Mbani. No.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is very simple. Just to maybe come with, leave with you thinking with some comfort of having maybe a tentative date of this workshop, you know, learning from the experience that's supposed to take place a long time ago in the city. So I think maybe if you can just have that, you know, in mind, not telling the department down, but at least you will give us some comfort.
Okay, before I give it to Villian, I want to check from my team left vulnerable member again whether we have anything. Okay, fine.
No, I think thank you, man. Thank you.
All of members are PD2 our admin staff. Come on, move on.
Thank you. Good morning, members. My suggestion to Chairperson this morning was to not to have the workshop around the third week of June. The House is sitting next to the holiday Tuesday, so the committee will probably not meet the same for Thursday. And this type of workshop will require a holiday meeting. And the earliest period for that, and also other team members, is I spoke to the bulk office yesterday. They were done their process with the bill, with the editing, and there is a draft already that I could circulate to members. I can get the draft bill today and circulate to members the last bill. But it hasn't been formally referred to the committee yet. But that process will happen soon. So that will probably give us a week or so for the formal referral. So my suggestion, where for the date of the workshop, where the committee can have a full day, unless the committee decides to meet on a Friday or a Saturday, will be the committee period set aside for the week of the 20th of June. So that will be, let me just put it in my calendar, that would be after the public holiday, the first day on the 20th of June. Is that acceptable to members? That will mean it's a whole day, no interruptions, no sitting of the house. And it will also give enough time for the department and staff to prepare in case we need other facilitators involved as well. That will also give opportunity for members to go through all the matrices that will be provided from the committee on comments received on stakeholders at departmental level. So there will be enough time for preparation and then enough time to have the workshop. So that is my suggestion for the 20th of June.
Okay, honourable members, here is the proposal from our admin. So, but I want to caution our members before the meeting starts to interact with this proposal. Yes, I fully agree about the process and the procedure of Parliament that let it be the beginning of giving to the committee formally. Because if we don't do that process, it will maybe some time as a time to come. So, but at the meantime, I'd like to give it this to Honourable Ramakrishna as well.
Which I was going to suggest that let's note the date, the 20th, and let's not make a firm decision on that. Because I think we need to look at the program, the fuller program of the committee. Because we still have, in terms of our previous decision, a decision of how do we engage with the some critical oversight that we needed to do. So I think that before we cast that in concrete, let's note it, but let's look at the program for that period, a full program for that period. Because we may have that workshop partners in front in parallel, depending on where we will be in terms of our basically oversight period.
Okay, before I give it to the chairperson, maybe to have a comment. Because there is some few things which we highlighted by the minister. Do you have anything from the side of this person? From the nothing. Okay, chairperson, what about you?
Thank you very much. I don't know what you're handing over to me. I've just been outside a bit, so I would request you to continue.
Okay. Jefferson, already there is a proposal of the tentative date for the workshop, but we were so sensitive about the processes and the procedures that we must follow. Number one, that the bill has not yet been given to us formally, that we wait for that process. And then secondly, Honourable Member Ramazakana was sensitizing us about the program which is there. So I think we have touched a lot of things. The only two things which were done, that which one do we take. Therefore, I think there's no qualms of even about to close the meeting because we agreed to the admin that to look for us, how is our program, so that we come and we can tell it to be for our workshop.
Okay. I think on that note, we definitely will be able to follow the issues that we raised today, particularly a letter that must go to the minister, highlighting the fact that we'd like to robustly engage with the two bills, have a workshop which we'll be able to look into how we're going to take the process forward, but also suggest a tentative date based on the parliamentary processes and program. If the in the eventuality the bill has not been sent to the committee, members will, the RAPS bill, because we've got the RAF amendment bills here, before the 20th, members will be properly notified of the progresses in that regard. On that note, let me thank you, Mr. Balance, Mr. Mapakela and your team from the Department of Transport, honorable colleagues, members, officials from the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa. It always is pride that I take in this portfolio committee that you make my job so simple. Because you are Yabushera. Yeah. I really enjoy working with the likes of yourselves. Because you know, holy mushi, but wabushera, okona wusha. Honorable Humsinga, can you write it down? Holy mushi, but wabushera, okona wusha. You are really spot on. I appreciate that. I thought that Honorable Mpanda would translate that to you, but you have really spot on. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. For Honorable Defenders, I'm sorry.
Okay, I want to very much.
to ask about any progress on the proposed state term oversight trip. I've taken the liberty of making some inquiries, and my information is that there's no such rule that, you've got to finish certain amount of legislation and so forth before you undertake it. And also, all committees are doing legislation at some stage or other.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering if there's any progress there, and the reason why I'm asking is obviously we need to look at our diaries and think about
it. Who wanted a good Brazil?
Let me say, up to so far, we have done our work in terms of engaging with the Department of International Relations, who actually we requested them to post it, the requirements that Parliament needs. What is left is for the House Chair. We had made proposals in terms of the date, which was supposed to be the last week of June, the first week of July. But in view of the fact that DERCO delayed a bit in terms of giving us the necessary requirements, we now have to send to the House Chair the proposed date that we envisage, which actually will not now be the last week of June, the first week of July. Probably we'll need to look into post-recess middle of August. That is how far we have gone.
We keep on postponing too much. Let's stick to this date and let's push that this thing can be, be done. There's nothing wrong with pushing this thing. If the necessity that we need to go there, we need to ensure that we do our visa, let's prepare our passport and get ready for visa.
The actual and the reality is, in terms of the parliamentary requirements, the Department of International Relations should be able to be the front runner in this whole thing. And up to last week or so, we have not received anything, but we have been communicating with them, the Department of International Relations. On our side, as early as February, we have already done all the processes, but the challenge is the Department of International Relations. If we've got other ways that we can be able to assist in making sure that we fast track, would really appreciate that we engage with the secretary to this committee and myself, because I have already gone to the House Chair to say probably this committee doesn't deserve international trips, and would want to know as to why it doesn't. If it's me who's a stumbling block, I'll recuse myself and then the rest of the people go so that they get given a chance. If it's any other thing, but I made kind of a, I don't want to put it like, because I was now informed that these are the processes which have to be followed, which have not as yet been to the House Chair. Honorable Ramakakana and then Honorable Khadere. You want to read? You must hear them.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. It's here now.
No, Chair, all I wanted to suggest that the only delay always happens because the embassy to the country of origin has to work out the process in consultation with their counterpart. The always the problem is the preparation, because the desk sometimes takes long to prepare. But that does not stop you from talking to the our embassy, or talking to the embassy for the embassy to start understanding that we are coming and preparing a plan. I mean, in most of my previous time, the problem has always been the desk. Because the best that might do it. So I will go directly. You can phone the embassy directly and say, this is what's the likelihood of the program in this period, in this period. They can say, we can prepare that. That's what they will do in many cases. But there's a laser fair attitude, because they are officials with these businesses. They put it in the incoming train and they don't forget about it. They don't prioritize it. I think if we know who the ambassador is in those countries, I mean, we can do it without necessarily having to have a whole lot of problems. But which they will then have to accept, because that's what they're going to be going to force the date for us. They're not going to go there, they're going to pass our office there. Mm-hmm. So if we decide on a date, it is by and large our responsibility to make sure it happens. We can't only leave it for that process, and it's going to be, and I think that your office will be critical into this process. It's a phone call away. You can send it directly to the email. Nobody prohibits you from communicating with this office to make a preparation. And I don't think that, of course, Valerie will be told not to do it, because she is a staff in a solar center protocol. But your protocol is not the same as Valerie's protocol, insofar as information collection levels. It's taking a bit long for that administrative process, I must say. Thank you, Chair.
So, when Chair, I was saying that is whether you can be able to call the EDM, but moreover, let's make sure that if you say our services members should submit our passport as soon as like tomorrow. And you know, push them to the far end so that this thing can happen. So either whosoever that is and that thing, you can have a price, and that's what you want. You don't have any other alternative. And that date cannot be changed. You must push so that this, because these officials are lazy, really lazy. Must you not think we want to get out of the office?
No. It doesn't work like that. thank you very much. Honorable Ramakakana was proposing that we get a tentative date. That one which is touching Russia has since then, but we have to get a tentative date in the eventuality. That one is not realized. What is the proposal?
Honorable
Chairperson, I think already there was a tentative date which we put in front of one. Because what I'm scared of, okay, I understand that process and procedure, but from our side,
the dialogue program in terms of the process of the dream. That is the only thing which I'm sure. Other things I don't have any problems. What are we proposing? When we go out now, myself and myself, this room, we can do something.
Thank you very much.
Where are we proposing to go, Chair?
Earlier on I had proposed end of July, beginning of August, depending on that when is the recess, when are we coming back, so that we're not seen maybe to be intruding into members' holiday period. So we'll look at the resource period and be able to say how do we deal with this matter. Honourable members, I think... Honourable members, having spoken about the oversight abroad, we still have outstanding oversight internally that we must do. And immediately, one that comes to mind is the oversight to the Northern Cape, which we should be able to do during our oversight period. I don't know if honourable members have got a... I don't know if other members have got a proposal as to... And what else, if we go to the Western Cape where they indicated the challenges in terms of the roads, where else can we think of going to do oversight, or rather on what else can we go and do oversight? Honorable De Freitas?
Chair, I really need to go to that oversight and read a petition. But I'd like to suggest that if we go to the Northern Cape, it's a very vast province. Would it not be an idea to kill two birds with one stone by looking at the actual matter that the petition is talks about? The Northern Cape. I get queries. I'm just not my experience from the Northern Cape, which I then pass on to Samuel, whatever the case is. And I suspect that it's a province that doesn't get much attention because it's so vast, it's so rural, there's a small population. And I wonder if it wouldn't be an idea, and maybe our researchers could look at it, that we look not only at the petition that's been presented to us, but perhaps roads. We wouldn't be able to look at the whole province, but certainly in certain parts of it, and the conditions there, and what people are confronted with. So my suggestion would be to broaden that scope in the Northern Cape.
Indeed, we are going to be looking. The petition was on roads, so I don't know if our focus should be on holistically roads in the Northern Cape, or should we also look into other aspects, public transport and other related matters? That's what I would really like to know, so that we're able to know that we can guide the researchers so that they can be able to really have a proper focus. Honorable Ramachakan.
No, thank you, Chair. I think we should have maybe the road is covered. And they have to need to deal with the rain. I think the researcher must try and look at the connectivity of rail in the Northern Cape, particularly when you look at the problem of VR area in terms of that as a distribution point. There is a degree of asset not being looked after. This whole debate about the transport and transport. So if we could do that, that issue with the rate in particular. If you need a bit of driving because of the vastness of the area, for instance, in Zimbabwe and then the city, there's another gesture that we need to do in terms of covering that. But I think definitely we need to deal with rates so that we can come up with some kind of a report that helps us in this discussion. of the road infrastructure that is making between the two departments. So I would suggest that we do.
Thank you very much, honourable members. I think we are agreeing that our focus will be in the Northern Cape, and our focus will be on road and rail in the Northern Cape for the week that we will be engaged in overtime issues. Honourable Director.
I
think we're done.
I got a frantic message last week from a colleague in the basic education committee. He was very upset because according to that committee, there was a meeting that had been pre-arranged, a joint committee meeting between transport and basic education. It was supposed to take place last Tuesday, but obviously I feel I know nothing about it. Apparently it had been arranged 6 weeks in advance, and the committee was quite upset, all of that was, that he weren't there and all that kind of thing, and I said, look, I don't know anything about it. I'm hearing about it for the first time on Tuesday, that day, while the meeting was happening, and I undertook just to present it today. I don't know if there was a break in communication or what the story is, I'm not sure.
Honourable member, I don't know. Because normally if there's something, the secretary of the committee informs the committee accordingly. So I would not talk to that one. That the committee actually did not attend. You get communications from Valerie. And therefore, if Valerie did not send you a communique, there is an indication. Yeah, I will leave it at that.
Yes, sir, there was a joint meeting, but there was a meeting of the committee, and it was on the parliament, it was on the list of meetings of the committee, so, but it wasn't a joint meeting as such, but it was advertised by the portfolio committee in the venture.
I mean, let's be honest, we haven't seen, maybe we still have to see the inefficiency in terms of communicating what is supposed to be communicated to us. And I also saw the, what is it, ATC, whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that the Reserve Joint Committee meeting. And I since engaged with the portfolio chair to say, we are debating, and that is why we did not put anything that we, for members to be able to prepare themselves in the morning for the debate in the afternoon. And I said, obviously, members would have seen the ATC. Those who would be free to go would be able to go. I'm not stopping anybody, but I highlighted the fact that we are debating in the afternoon. By virtue of, I did not receive any communication from Valerie. I only saw it on the ATC. So that is how it is. Any other matter?
None.
Thank you very much.
You didn't agree with your colleague. You says none. Honorable Lucina.
I would say there was a time for a focus. That meeting which then apparently took place without us, and I accept what you say, it was on the scholar transport, but so are you putting it on the agenda to then rearrange such a meeting, or are we going to ignore this? Why do they regard it as important and then have it without us, there's a lot of questions around this, so are we going to have it or not? And it's on the scholar transport issue you said between the two departments and all the practical implications around it.
Thank you, honourable members. I stand to be advised. We have to activate and engage with the portfolio committee on transport. On basic education on the matter that was raised. I stand to be advised.
you are advised that it must be put it on our agenda.
Beg your pardon?
You are advised that it must be put it into our agenda, and the committee, the proper committee, must be with the said particular committee. Yes.
Honorable Ramakata?
No, Chair, I don't know what I think. I thought we would take that matter up with the Chair offline to determine. Because if we have missed a ban, and then we have missed a ban, that means if we want the briefing, we must have a briefing ourselves directly at the Department of the Financial Committee on Transport, rather than to forcing another committee to go back to the agenda they have already in the transport. I think we should do that rather than. My issue is that somehow the South Navy and the to consider when are we actually having this engagement with the Transnet, with the public enterprise body, that somehow we need to stay there.
Thank you very much. Can I maybe think of a middle of the road, honorable member, that we request a report from basic education on what they did on that particular thing, and when we will be engaging with the scholar transport issues in our portfolio committee, then we are able to infuse what already has been done by basic education so that we are able to I want to defend whom things
come.
What do defectors do? Because he's so quiet.
Communication can happen at this high position. What's happening at the lower government is really famous. That you must be able to consider it, that to deal with this.
But honourable members, I am saying probably a middle of the road where we're able to get the what they did on that particular day, and when we have our own committee, we deal with the scholar transport based on the outcomes of what they did on that particular day, and then it becomes something that will sign a judge going to both the departments. But honourable Ramatakana has also made a very critical proposal, which all of our debate, everybody who debated on the 3rd of May, 23rd, whatever, of May, indicated the challenge and the precarious situation that we find ourselves in when dealing with issues and matters of roads in the Republic of South Africa between the two Department of Public Enterprises and the Department of Transport. Prasa and Transnet, which actually is a situation which is unbearable. We can't continue like that. They also raise issues when it comes regulator. They also raise issues when it comes to when you are in the sea. The challenges that are there between Transnet and the ports regulator and the ports authority, we need to look into that to say how do we. I would suggest and make a proposal that we need to have a joint committee with the portfolio committee on transport, wherein public enterprises. Thank you. We're able to bring in PRASA and bring in port regulator and the port authority so that we're able to deal with this matter and really make a concrete proposal to government, because it's not really workable. At the expense of our people, the passengers have to wait for 3 hours waiting for the goods train to pass, because it is the line that belongs to traffic. What the hell? Who the hell are we saving? Are we saving those cattle that are passing there, or the copper that is passing, or are we saving the people of the Republic? To me, that is not really workable. How do you, as people belonging to the same cattle crowd, you have to pay the other cattle money? Because Transnet all the time is owing over R1 billion to Transnet. Transnet is also counting profit, utilizing some of the infrastructure. And to me, I would add that if it's possible, both ministers should be there. But we will write a minute to the portfolio committee on public enterprises, probably tentative date of the meeting that we should be able to hold in this regard. Agree?
Agree.
Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.
Amanda Wang.
What is the secret vote?
Yes?
What is the secret vote? Whether secret or not. Secret or no secret. Nothing. I can't wait for that.
Red overall. No.
I'm going to go to the house.